In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And the earth was without form and void, and darkness was upon the face of the deep. And the Spirit of God moved over churning chaos. And God said, "Let there be light." And there was light. And all that God said, it was so. If you have been to Athens, Greece, where St. Paul was 2,000 years ago this morning in our story, then you know the Areopagus, both as Mars Hill, Ares Hill, that huge outcrop of rock that juts out just across from the Acropolis. And you know it also as the Council of Elders, a body of officials who since about the 5th or 6th century B.C. assembled there at the Areopagus to conduct official business. And St. Paul was there, and he cleverly spoke to the Areopagus assembly of an unknown God. This was an unknown God that they honored and spoke, and Paul spoke to them in such a way as to lead them to identify their God, Agnostos Theos, with Paul's own Hebrew God, whose name could not be spoken except by allusion, the Jewish custom, the Jewish rule. This was Adonai, the Lord, Yahweh, who appeared to Moses in the burning bush, but whose name was too sacred and holy to be spoken aloud. Yahweh Elohim, God the creator of heaven and earth. Now in the first lesson you heard Paul's speech or sermon just now. It's a clever presentation, and the rest of the story tells us that some people there thought Paul was a nutcase, but there were a few, including two who are actually named in the Bible, named in the story, who believed Paul and apparently were converted to Jesus Christ and followed Paul in the way, which is what our faith was called before it came to be called Christianity. I do not want to examine all four lessons this morning, and besides that, in the Episcopal Church, most of our sermons are preached from the gospel reading for the Sunday, where this morning the evangelist, whom we call John, has Jesus in his farewell discourse promising the disciples who are at supper that night that when he, Jesus, is taken away, God will send the Holy Spirit. And so this gospel reading alerts us to two things in our life as a Christian community. And the first is that this coming Thursday, the church commemorates what we call the Ascension. It takes place 40 days after Easter, and it's one of the seven highest holy days of the church year, the Ascension, when, according to Acts chapter 1, Jesus ascends to the Father. But you see, because our church experiences that nobody will bother coming to church on Thursday, we're allowed to move the Ascension to next Sunday, which is Easter 7. And that's up to the preacher, and I don't know whether Father Steve will do that or not. If I were preaching, I would do that. I would move the Ascension to Easter 7. I always did that at churches where I was the rector. Because even if the Ascension begs credence, Ascension is fun to visualize, and because over the Christian centuries, artists have given us fascinating paintings to look at. And many of these paintings are called the Disappearing Feet. And they depict the disciples and Mother Mary gazing up in astonishment at Jesus' feet, which is all you see of him, as Jesus' feet disappear into the clouds. And some of the art is quite ancient and also quite famous. Some of it is ludicrous, even naive, and I remember that my theology professor at seminary thought it was all hilarious. Every year I post some of the most fantastical of that art on my blog, and I look forward to doing that again in my blog post for this coming Thursday. So our gospel anticipates the Ascension. The other event that today's gospel foretells is Pentecost, when liturgical colors changed to flaming red in here for the day. All of them were Jews at that time. All Jesus' disciples were Jews, and they are gathered in Jerusalem for Pentecost, which is the Jewish festival that's 50 days after Passover. And they gather there when suddenly the room where they're assembled is filled with sound. And the Bible describes it as the rush of a mighty wind as the Holy Spirit comes upon them. Tongues of flame dance upon their heads, and there's glossolalia, which is speaking in tongues and full understanding of the tongues. Pentecost is a startling spectacle that, like Ascension, is another of our seven highest holy days on the church calendar. So I'm telling you this so that you will know what's ahead of us here at Holy Nativity and throughout the church at large. What I want to touch on this morning, though, is something that our Bishop Russell Kendrick included in the current issue of the Coastline. The Coastline is our diocesan newsletter that you should be receiving as email about once a month. And if you're not receiving the Coastline, then you need to let Madge know about that so that she can get you on the bishop's list. And this article that the bishop put in ties in with today's gospel of love, of loving Jesus, of Jesus' summary of the law, love God and love neighbor. And what I wanted to tell you that our national church is about to introduce what is being called Becoming Beloved Community. Becoming Beloved Community. Becoming Beloved Community is not meant to be just a short-term program where everybody goes to a half-day indoctrination or orientation briefing and then you sign off and that you've been there and then you go home. But Becoming Beloved Community is intended as a long-term commitment to racial healing, reconciliation, and justice. That's the title and definition that the church has given to it. It's meant to help us, each of us as individuals and all of us as family, as church, as community, as nation, and indeed all the world, to help us, lead us, move us over our lifetime and forever into the mind of Christ as our Christian way of life. Now, we haven't been told, and I do not know yet what all we might see and hear in the years ahead as we become beloved community, which is in fact the baptismal journey toward becoming Christ, which is what the baptismal journey is about, becoming Christ. I do pray that this will be for us a changing, conversion, metamorphosing faith experience. I do know that becoming beloved community focuses on the actions that we promise every time we baptize a new Christian here, and every time we renew our baptismal vows. We do that often here at Holy Nativity. And as you know, the demand of baptism is pointed, it is sharp, it is clear, it is unconditional, it is startling, even frightening, in its call to become very different from what we are at the moment. And as you also know, very few or none of us truly live into the way of the cross that baptism demands of us on the far side of the baptismal font. Will you? And though we promise I will with God's help, it's largely an empty promise. But it seems that God is about to help, after all, in the Holy Spirit of the Episcopal Church movement, becoming beloved community. We'll hear more about it in the days ahead. I pray the Holy Spirit to fill us, each of us, with determination to the becoming and the becoming of Christ. And as a reminder and a new beginning, I ask that you turn in your Book of Common Prayer to page 292, page 292, as we stand.